All right, thank you for that. Crisscross applesauce. It is Tuesday at 9:40, and this is a time that we check in with Karen Lyle from SalesSportsTalk.com, who comes in to co-host this segment with me weekly. Karen, how are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic, Rick, and I'm really looking forward to our conversation today with Pip Hare.
All right, well, let's bring her in. Pip Hare. Love that name. She is back with us. We interviewed her last year about the Vendée Globe Race, and she is preparing again for the Vendée in a new boat that she just raced in the Rolex Fastnet race. Pip, welcome back to the show. Tell us a little bit first about what the Rolex Fastnet was.
Hello, and thanks for having me back. The Rolex Fastnet is actually the oldest offshore sailing race in history. It's a race that had its 100th anniversary this year, and it sets off from the Isle of Wight, which is to the south of the UK. It sails up to Ireland, goes around the very infamous Fastnet Rock, and finishes in France.
Pip, I am very excited about your new boat. Can you tell us about why you decided on this particular boat and its I know it was a 6-month process, but just a little tidbit of information about what it's like to race it now.
The boat's incredible. So actually, rather than a new boat, we upgraded our existing boat to make it in line with current design. So what we've done is put these super giant foils on the side, which are kind of like big C-shaped wings. And what they do is lift the whole boat out of the water. So when I'm going at full speed, I fly about 1.5 to 2 meters above the water. And my top speed so far has been 37 knots, which is absolutely incredible. It's just turbocharged the boat beyond belief.
I remember the Vendée, this is about 20 years ago now, and on this show I interviewed Bruce Schwab, who was from the Bay Area, and he would call me weekly on a satellite phone, and it was very interesting to sort of be on the boat with him and see all the tribulations and falling asleep and hoping he didn't hit a log. And what are some of those privations and anxieties you go through on something like that?
So it's still pretty much the same. You know, I think one of the big issues for any sailor that's crossing a stretch of open water is worrying about hitting submerged objects, in particular kind of containers that tend to float just below the surface of the water. But now, because the boats go so fast now, we go faster than container ships now.
Wow.
So we have to be thinking that much further ahead. And we really have to stay at the forefront of technology as well, because the boats are sailing so fast, we're needing to really use the latest technology to see what's ahead of us. But it also means that we can sleep for less time. So with the older, slower boats, you could justifiably sleep for kind of an hour or 2 hours. But now, because our boats travel such huge distances in a short amount of time, my sleeping window is less than half an hour now.
Wow.
That's a little challenging, to say the least. You know, I wanted to know on this, the foils, and out in the ocean, what happens if you have considerable swells? I know that usually foiling is something that is done more ideally in flatter waters. Tell us a little bit about the ways in which you might or might not use the foils on the Vendée Globe.
So we have to be quite thoughtful about how we use them. And I think that's one of the really interesting things about a race like the Vendée, because it's so long, because it lasts for months. Then it's about maintaining high averages rather than big top speeds. And that's for the human being as well as the boat, because we can fly in big waves, but the problem is that the movement is erratic, and you'll be kind of flying 2 meters above the water, and then all of a sudden a wave will kind of trip the boat up and you'll crash down. And that's like having a car crash and not being belted in. So we have to think about preserving ourselves, which means that we extend or retract the foils to manage the ride height above the waves, depending on what the sea state is like. And as we get tired as athletes, or as the sea gets rougher, then we'll use less foil. And when we get those beautiful flat reaching conditions in the trade winds, that's when we'll go max foil and pedal to the metal.
Rick Tittle and Karen Lau with you, SailSportTalk.com on Sports Byline. We are with Pip Hare. And Pip, anyone can, you know, get prepared for a Vendée. You need the seamanship. But what about the psychological aspect? Because you can't be crying yourself to sleep every night, man, woman, or child. You have to have that rock-hard countenance to do it. What are about some of the challenges and the loneliness?
So you're right. You need to want to do this race, because, you know, my last race was 95 days long. So I was 95 days alone facing everything. And I you have to be happy in your own company. But I think also for me, it's really important that I've drawn kind of a really distinctive line between the concept of being alone and the concept of being lonely. And actually, you know, I take huge strength from the fact that I know I have friends and family and a team on the shore who are all with me in spirit and there if I need them on the end of the phone. Just because they're not physically in the same space as me doesn't mean they're not there. And I guess the other thing is kind of you need to build a resilience, because the problems keep coming. The boat will continuously be breaking. You know, you might not end up in the same right weather that you want to. You might lose against your competitor one day, and you need to find a way of always believing that you can recover. And every time you get knocked down, standing up and moving forward. And I think that for me is the challenge that I relish, because I kind of have this inner mantra that it doesn't matter how many times you push me over, I will get up again. And that's one of the things that I really kind of push myself to do.
Kip, your offshore team is so important to you in helping you through this race. Can you tell us of a specific incident that you really want to give a shout out to your team as to how their work really mattered for you?
Yes, absolutely. And you're right. All the focus is on the skipper. You know, we say it's a solo sport, but it's not. In the same way that when you watch an F1 driver go around the racetrack, he's got people in his ear, he's got engineers, he's got design studio behind him. It's exactly the same way for me. And I think the times when there's a lot of work that goes kind of unseen and unpraised. We're all very focused on the exciting and the dramatic times, like, for example, when I broke my rudder in the middle of the ocean. But actually, the reason I was able to change my rudder was because of the days, weeks, years that my shore team had spent taking the boat apart, learning how it went together, working out what I would do if I had to change a rudder on my own. It was my shore team who put the spare rudder on the boat, who devised the mechanism to put a rudder in the middle of the ocean. It was my shore team who checked the lengths of the lines, that I had the right amount of pulleys. They wrote the diagram for me. They taught me through how to do it. And it's actually all of this historic work that was the clever bit, kind of executing it in one go was just the end result of a lot of diligent work.
Well, you obviously, as you say over there, you've got the bottle for this. But was there ever a moment where you thought you were in a squall or what have you, and you thought, you know what, this is a little bit too perilous, and I've got nothing left to prove to myself? Or is it the kind of thing where you're laying in bed and you're just itching to get back out there regardless?
Do you know what? It is. It drives me. I love this sport so much because there are endless possibilities. There are so many ways to improve with design, with speed, with my own performance, with tactical stuff, with navigation. And I'm just so curious to see where we can go next. And I'm always confident that I have the right boat for the job. I'm not always confident about my ability to really perform. You know, that's the bit that I'm pushing. But my place is in the middle of the ocean, and I always, always want to go back there.
By the way, I'm just going to interject. I said you've got the bottle at piphair.com. You sell those Ion 8 bottles, don't you?
We sold out this morning. But thank you.
Got time for one more question, Karen?
Yes. Tell us a little bit about the sponsor that allowed you to be able to retrofit your boat. I noticed that they were SAAS, and which is related to communications. Is there any relationship between that and your boat as to why you chose them or they chose you?
So my sponsor is Medallia, and I think we have a lot of synergy actually in terms of kind of the way they look at business and the services that they provide for their customers is all about this concept of infinite tuning, of using feedback to develop what you have and to keep progressing forwards and keep making leaps forwards. And kind of that's what they aim to do for their customer, for their clients. So their clients can get feedback from their customers and keep developing a product. And for me, you know, I'm giving feedback to my shore team, my boat's giving feedback to me, and we're in this infinite tuning cycle as well towards, you know, this progression towards a sporting goal.
Well, they say Britannia rules the waves. You can tell it. It's in the DNA of our guest, Pip Hare, a great sailing master. Pip, thank you for coming on once again, and best of luck in the Vendée.
Thanks very much for having me.
Thank you, Pip. Such a pleasure to talk to you.
And Karen, real quick, you ever going to do a Vendée yourself?
You know, I would just absolutely love to follow Pip on this Vendée.
In a luxury yacht. I'll go with you. All right. Hey, Karen, salesporttalk.com. Go there, salesporttalk.com. Good to talk to you. We'll catch up next week.
We will indeed.